Dead Man's Footsteps by Peter James. Read by Neil Pearson. If Ronnie Wilson had known, as he woke up, that in just a couple of hours' time he'd be dead, he would have planned his day somewhat differently. For a start, he might not have spent quite so long polishing his shoes or getting the knot of his expensive silk tie absolutely right. He peered through the window across 39th Street, but the realization that it was a fine morning did nothing to lift his spirits. Recently, when people asked him how he was, he'd taken to replying, "My life is shit." The hotel room was shit, too, the cheapest room the W had, but appearances mattered. If you stayed at a W in Manhattan, you were somebody, even if you were sleeping in the broom closet. Ronnie knew he needed to get himself into a more positive mood. People responded to the vibes you gave out, particularly when you were asking for money. Nobody would give money to a loser, not even an old friend. At least, not the kind of money he needed. His fake Bulgari watch, he'd bought it on the internet for £40, but hey, who could tell, told him it was 7:43 a.m. So, time to rock and roll. He placed his Louis Vuitton briefcase, also fake, on top of his overnight bag and, wheeling it behind him, left the room. Emerging from the elevator on the ground floor, he skulked past the front desk. His credit cards were so maxed out, he probably didn't have enough to settle the bill, but he'd worry about that later. Today's meeting, he thought grimly, was the last chance saloon. Sitting on the subway, Ronnie was aware something had gone wrong in his life. Plenty of his contemporaries had gone on to have big successes. They had their big swinging dick houses, their trophy wives, their kids to die for. What did he have? Neurotic Lorraine, who spent the money he didn't have on beauty treatments she didn't need and designer clothes they couldn't afford. The only expenditure of which he'd approved had been her boob job. But of course, he was too proud to admit to her the mess he was in. And, ever the optimist, he always believed there was a solution just around the corner. So now, as the train headed downtown, he mentally rehearsed his pitch. He was here in the hope of convincing his old friend, Donald Hatcook, who was rumoured to have made north of $1 billion in derivatives, whatever they were, that he knew the secret of making money out of the next golden goose. Biodiesel. Sure, Bill Gates and all the other entrepreneurs on the planet were looking for the way forward in the biofuel market, but Ronnie reckoned he'd identified a niche. All he had to do this morning was convince Donald. People said if you hadn't made it by 40, you were never going to. He was coming up to 43. And he was coming to his station, Chambers Street. He wanted to walk the last few blocks to Donald's office. He emerged into the fine Manhattan morning and checked his watch. 8:10. Passing a sign informing him he was now on Wall Street, he entered the packed downtown deli, sat on a red leather barstool, ordered orange juice and a latte, then gave Lorraine a quick call on her mobile. She wished him luck. 20 minutes later, as he was paying the bill, he heard a massive bang somewhere in the distance.
"Jesus, what the fuck was that?" said a guy on the next stool.
Ronnie collected his change and stepped out into the street. Donald Hatcook's office was on the 87th floor of the South Tower of the World Trade Center. It was 8:47 a.m. on the morning of September the 11th, 2001. October 2007. Abby Dawson had chosen this flat because it felt secure. Apart from the back fire escape, which could only be opened from inside, there was only the one entrance, and the windows gave her a clear view up and down the street 8 floors below. No one was going to get in unless she invited them. But just in case, she had a canister of mace pepper spray, a hunting knife, and a baseball bat. Ironic, she thought, that the first time in her life she was able to afford a home luxurious enough to